Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gabaza, and for today, we're talking around some changes to the Customary Marriages Amendment Bill that was recently passed by the National Assembly, and what it could actually mean, you know, for the country going forward, you know, because there's been a significant development in terms of women's rights, and in line with what's been happening with International Women's Day that recently passed. And then right now we're waiting to see whether or not the president will be signing this into law. And to sort of help us to unpack what, you know, what the actual implications are, what it means, what it doesn't mean, we are joined on the line by David Thompson, who is a senior legal advisor at Sanlam Trust. David, good morning to you.
Hello, Madiba. How are you?
Doing all right on this end, just trying to wrap our heads around, you know, what all of this actually means. But I think for us to really get going, it might help us to at least establish a baseline where we understand, you know, what the actual difference is between customary marriages and, I guess, what are considered to be quote unquote traditional marriages or mainstream marriages. I don't know what the word is, you know, because we might not all at least fully understand it from a legal point of view.
Yes, it is very important, Madiba. You know, in our diverse democracy, we have choices as to how we can get married, and getting married in terms of customary law or traditional law, which would mostly focus on black folks in South Africa, is since 15 November 2001 fully recognized as a valid marriage with equivalent status to a civil marriage in terms of the Marriage Act. So for many people, you know, going to a marriage officer, whether it's a church or a court, they would get married in terms of civil law, in terms of our Marriage Act, and they would then have a choice to get married in community of property or out of community of property. Then we had the Civil Unions Act come along a few years ago, which permitted persons same-sex in a same-sex relationship to get married as well. And in fact, people in heterosexual or homosexual relationships can get married in terms of the Civil Union Act. Then we have religious marriages. So people may get married according to Hindu rites or Muslim rites. Those are also recognized as valid marriages. And so customary marriages would generally be marriages celebrated according to custom, arranged between the two families. Lobola may or may not be paid. That's not critical in the Customary Marriages, Recognition of Customary Marriages Act. It sets out the factors that play a role to give evidence that a customary marriage has actually been concluded. There is in the Act an obligation on the parties to register that traditional marriage with the authorities, say with Home Affairs, but government has been kicking that can down the road for some years. And I think so what they did, they said, okay, we're going to give people 2 years to register that customary marriage. But ever since then, it's just been postponed for another 2 years at every time. So some people sometimes say, but Dave, I'm married according to customary law, but it's never been registered. Am I married? And my answer is yes. If you can prove and establish that you are married in terms of customary law, then you are actually married in terms of customary law. At this stage, you don't need to waive a piece of paper. Of course, the disadvantage of that for many people can be, you know, if you've got married in terms of the Marriage Act or the Civil Unions Act, you have a marriage certificate, which sometimes can be a problem for people that are in customary law marriages. But what it didn't change, even though customary marriages were recognized as valid and binding, it left a particularly black woman in a very parlous situation, because it said that unlike our civil law, where the default law applying to marriages in community of property, where the woman and the men share the marital property equally, for a woman married according to customary law prior to 15 November 2001, the default was out of community of property. And effectively, black women were in a situation where if the marriage ended by death or divorce, they very often got absolutely nothing.
Now, I understand that one of the big contentions with the bill and with the act as it was framed earlier was it wasn't fully in line with the Constitution. So the point that you've just made now about black women not having the rights that other wives would have, that wives in I guess your normal marriages or your religious marriages, the ones that hold the marriage certificate, is that what we're talking about when we say not in line with the Constitution?
Absolutely not aligned with the Constitution, where it is not lawful to discriminate arbitrarily on the basis of gender or sex. And it's taken the Constitutional Court to actually step in. So in the Gumede case in 2009, it started where the Constitutional Court said this act is not fair and equitable and is discriminatory. And they were dealing with a monogamous customary marriage at the time. And they said this notion that a woman married to a gentleman in a monogamous customary marriage, that she doesn't have any rights to marital property when the husband dies, and that if he chooses to leave his estate to his eldest son or to a girlfriend, she has no claim. They said that is completely unacceptable. And they called upon Parliament to deal with it. But then it took until 2017 with the Ramohovi case, Constitutional Court case, which was a polygamous customary marriage, where the court once again said, once again, this act is unconstitutional because it discriminates against black women purely on the basis of their gender and their marital status. So it was only really once the Constitutional Court had pronounced, and then in 2017 they said that, we're going to grant interim relief. The act is unconstitutional, but we're giving Parliament 2 years to change the law. It's obviously taken some time for Parliament to finally change the law. It had to go through quite a long process, but that's really what we're dealing with, unfair discrimination.
So when it comes to that, then unfair discrimination, and now we're saying that the changes have been made and it's just left for the president to sign the stuff into law. My understanding, I am not a lawyer, so I am open to all the correction here, is that when it comes to precedent in a court, it's prospective as opposed to being retrospective. So when it comes to a bill, and enacting a law like this, what does it mean for people that were married previously versus people that are going to be married according to, customary marriages?
Yes, this is very unusual because this is a bill which will become an act that is retrospective. It is going to give relief to all women married in terms of customary law, whether after 15 November 2000 or before 15 November 2000. November 2000 being the day that the Recognition of Customary Marriages Act came into being. So it is going to affect parties retrospectively. It won't affect a situation where one of the parties passed away and that deceased estate has already been wound up. And it also won't apply where marital property has already been transferred out of an estate or out of a party's name as a result of a divorce or something like that. But otherwise, it is going to give relief to all persons married in customary law retrospectively. Of course, it's quite interesting is that, it is a game changer for women. But we have to also remember the other side, the notion of being married in community of property may seem fair and equitable. As you may know, people who get married now, particularly in civil law, they will commonly execute a prenup. Well, not commonly, it's probably the exception still, mostly in middle class and that. So they'll do a prenup, we call it an antenuptial contract, where they keep their assets separately. But for most people who get married, the majority of people don't do a prenup and they're married in community of property. Of course, that can work quite well where, say, the woman is possibly the poorer spouse who stayed at home, looked after the children, kept the household going. But of course, you may have a situation where a woman's married by customary law. She's a successful doctor or engineer or CEO. she's got all the money, and maybe the husband is unemployed, he's fallen off on hard times, he's sitting at home. So in a way, it also makes his position a little bit stronger. So I think that the rub to this is that, yes, for most rural women particularly, it'll strengthen their situation where the marriage terminates or where the husband passes on, particularly in polygamous marriages. Because you do have situations where a husband passes on or that the relationship ends and the second or third wife just has to get out the house and has to walk away with absolutely nothing. And the court in both those constitutional court cases referred to numerous instances where that does happen. And obviously that's grossly unfair. But, you know, it's also going to apply the other way around. So, you know, people married in customary law now need to realize we are basically, we never did an anti-nuptial contract. We are now married in community property. So if it's just you and I, 10B and I, then we share 50-50. But if it's myself and say three or four wives, we're going to share accordingly, you know. So what's interesting, the act is quite nuanced. It's not as simple as community of property, say, with a civil marriage. So if I was married in community of property and I got divorced, everything would be split down the middle. And it's quite simple to do that. Even if you have two or three properties, they can be sold, or you can give the one to the ex-wife and you keep the other one and you balance it out. It's quite tricky when you have a polygamous marriage. And so what the amendment to the Recognition of Customary Marriages Act says is that it determines that the household, the particular household that that wife is living in, she will get that household and the contents of that house. But what's in the best interest of the family as a whole? And then so if wife, another lady, 10B, is say living in Alex, then that particular house and household would go to her in the event of the husband's death or the termination of the marriage. So, you know, it's very important. It's a game changer. But of course, marriage it's also an emotional thing. You know, you even if you come out with a law, it's not just black or white. You know, oh, if I die or if I get divorced, you're going to get this and I'm going to get that. It's still going to, and the act also recognizes the fact that the family still needs to get together. And they still need to decide what's in the best interests of the family. I mean, as you will appreciate, it can be quite complicated. You may have a wife that's got three or four children living with her in a house, and another wife, say, living in a house all on her own. So, you know, is that going to be fair that it's just split where she gets the bigger house and the other wife gets the smaller house? So, now, believe me, like all these laws, it's fodder for lawyers. It's fodder for divorce attorneys. It's going to be very interesting to see how these things go forward. And of course, the only way to exclude community of property is, as the act says, to an anti-nuptial contract. But by definition, anti-nuptial means before. Mm. If you do an anti-nuptial contract, you must do it before you get married. If you now want to go and you say, hang on, this community of property, this status possibly doesn't suit us, we now want to do a prenup, we'll actually have to approach the High Court to get permission to register an anti-nuptial contract. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how many people particularly go that route. And I'm thinking also particularly of say, professional women who've got a substantial estate and who want to protect their estate, where particularly, say, their assets may not be in a trust, they're in their own name. And now they have a situation where they potentially have to share their assets on a divorce or termination of the marriage. So it's going to cut both ways. But I think, generally speaking, if you look at that thing as a whole, it is very, very, it's a big advantage. It is a game changer, particularly for women, black women in South Africa.
Now, you know, as you're talking, I get the sense that this is, particularly interesting from a legal point of view. You know, the type of questions and cases that are likely going to arise once the bill has been ratified and is now enacted into law. And one of the things I'm just, you know, this is just a quick one, but I'm not thinking, because am I correct in saying that, the amendment sort of brings the Customary Marriages Act sort of closer or more in line with the, you know, religious marriages and your civil unions, you're right? And then in answering that, my question has always been, this is just me, but I'm sure I'm not the only one who asks this, but because we're talking about property and rights and all of this stuff, like, is there anything just around what tests the court Has that been updated just around how the court tests whether or not a customary marriage was actually there?
Yeah, look, there aren't that many cases where people have gone to court to resolve whether there was a customary marriage or not. There was a recent case I see that received some publicity where a lady went to court to try and claim that she was either married, customary law, or in a partnership with the deceased. But the court held, looking at all the evidence, that she was merely a girlfriend. I can't remember the case reference offhand now, but it was received publicity recently. So they did go into detail there. You know, so was there a proper celebration? Did the families meet? Was there lobola exchanged? Was there a ceremony? You know, did she have a video, photographs of the wedding? Did the elders in the community say, yes, they are married, or did they say, no, they're not married? They were just in a casual relationship. She worked for him and stayed with them for a little bit. So it has gone to court from time to time. Obviously, going to court is an expensive exercise. And thankfully, you know, we've had a few matters where we simply at Sanlam Trust, where we were able to get this family to get together, and they were able to discuss the matter and to say, okay, Dave, we're comfortable as heirs that this lady was actually married to my dad, or vice versa. Because quite frankly, you know, to go to court, it's an arduous process. So I'm just thinking about that case, the so-called girlfriend case. I can't remember the reference offhand. I think it was in Gauteng. And there they did go through that. Otherwise, the act itself also sets out, you know, the requirements. But, you know, that's the thing. Our law is always dynamic. You know, particularly with the Constitutional Court, they're not shy to make law and to pronounce on law. So, but as to whether the traditions have really changed as to what is a customary marriage, I don't really think so. I think those traditions are pretty well set and embedded. But I have been asked in the past, I remember being asked a few times, you know, but what if lobola hasn't been paid? And the Act doesn't say that lobola has to have been paid. I remember we had a case where they'd only paid a deposit on the lobola, and they were busy arranging for the balance of it. And then the one party passed away. But everything else had been done. You know, they'd lived together for a while, they'd had children. So, you know, we were satisfied that this is a valid marriage. But who knows, if someone had gone to court to fight about it, you know, it's who knows how it would have turned out. So.
And I think this one is going to have a I think it's going to have a lot of implications, like you're saying. I think we're sort of talking and speculating right now, but I think the courts are going to have some very interesting cases on their hands going forward.
We had to change it, and it's taken a long time. And obviously, they had to consult with the House of Traditional Leaders and various women's groups and all that. I see their parliament consulted with more than 21 groups. So that's probably why it's taken so long. And of course, you know, the status of women in polygamous Muslim marriages in South Africa is also not entirely satisfactory. We had the Daniels case a couple of years ago where, you know, a woman in a polygamous marriage went to court to fight for her rights. And, you know, it's a real potpourri we have of marital law. And even, you know, we mentioned religious marriages early. Even there, you know, I don't believe that the woman always gets the fair shake. You know, but one has to respect, you know, different cultures and traditions in this country. But at the end of the day, we all fall under the Constitution. We all fall under the same law. And obviously, government is trying to consolidate. And I see even the Law Reform Commission is now coming up with a paper, and they want to write one marriage statute. That's going to be a big challenge. So the vision is to have one statute for marriage, not have a Marriage Act, Civil Unions Act, Customary Law Act, this thing, and all that court case, but try and all have it in one. But it's not an easy thing to do, you know. And I'm just also wondering, you know, what, generally speaking, if people say to me these days, oh, you know, they meant to do an antenuptial contract, can they do one now? And, you know, I don't practice law anymore, but I say to them, well, you need to go to a notary and and engage, but you've got to give notice to creditors, and you've got to explain why you didn't do one at the time. Maybe you weren't advised, or you thought it had been done, or the lawyer misfiled it, or sometimes think that people think they did an anti-nuptial contract, but they never signed it. But now, is it going to be justifiable to say, well, I want to do an anti-nuptial contract post-nuptially because I don't want to share my estate with my husband? Is that a valid reason? Probably not, so yeah, there's going to be all sorts of unintended consequences, I think, going forward.
The other one I'm just wondering about as well is, you mentioned just now that one of the big changes when it comes to customary marriages is the fact that the default position had been that you're being married out of community of property, but now it's in community of property. Is there an allowance for people in a customary marriage to create a prenup before entering into a customary marriage? And if so, how does that then differ from just going ahead and having a civil union?
Fortunately, Madiwa, since 15 November 2000, the default has been in community of property, right? But prior to 15 November 2000, it was out of community of property. So it left generally the older generation of black women who entered into a customary marriage in a vulnerable situation. Yes, you asked, the Act does not provide like a time period where parties can approach the court to change their marital status. So yes, you have a situation now where suddenly women married prior to 15 November 2000 are now by default men and women in community of property. From November 2000, which is when the Act started, they had a choice to do an antenuptial contract or not. It's unlikely there would be any relief granted to a court now for someone who, say, got married 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago. They would say, well, you had the chance when you got married to do a prenup. You can't do it now because it's potentially prejudicial to your spouse or prejudicial to your creditors or whatnot. So, but yes, this Act doesn't say, well, you've got now a period of time to deal with this. I mean, to be fair, the Act has been coming for some time. It's the amendment has been floating around for at least a couple of years. The Constitutional Court already spoke in 2017. So, you would think that people should have jumped around then, to possibly get an anti-nuptial contract drafted. So no, there is no sort of window period now. Once the president signs, it just sort of overnight changes the status of those older marriages.
I'm really getting a sense that our society is not ready for what's about to happen. Like,
It's actually quite interesting, especially with His Royal Highness, the King of the Zulu Nation passing on at this very stage, because obviously he's a gentleman that would have had strong views on this and maybe would have been someone who could have assisted this community to embed this and to understand it. But I'm not saying whether he or his, and of course it's not, they don't get involved in politics with how they would have felt about this. But I know for the traditional leaders, I would imagine it's quite a challenge, as it is a big challenge for the Muslim community when it comes to rights, because they, in generally speaking, their Sharia law is not geared towards community of property. There's a certain structure, there's a certain way that the estate is divided up. So yeah, it's a huge game changer for rural women, and it's actually very sad that the king has passed on at this stage, because it is going to take a lot of leadership to explain this and to embed this in communities across South Africa. Obviously there are many other kings and queens in South Africa and traditional leaders. But it's not going to be easy, I think. But this is progress, I suppose. It's moving along with the times with our constitution. We had a constitution for a long time, but a lot of the stuff we've been doing is not in line with the constitution, whether it's free education or homes for all. I mean, we've got it in theory, but we can't really do it practically sometimes.
Now, in the interest of time, because we could sit and I can tell we could sit and talk about this for many hours, right? Because there are many facets that are involved here. But as a parting shot, Are there any, I guess, statistics just to maybe get a sense of how prevalent customer marriages are in South Africa?
Madiba, to be honest, I don't know myself. I don't know myself how many folks are married in terms of customary marriage. What I am seeing is that, for example, we're in a fiduciary business, so we deal with folks who set up a will, or when they pass away, they wind up their estate. And when you think that, 80% of South Africans don't have a will, it's quite a frightening statistic, according to the Master's Office. Of course, many estates are never reported, unfortunately. But yes, at the moment, for many years, the vast majority of estates that we've been dealing with is pretty much, in the middle class. It's Civil Unions Act, Marriage Act, in community. Occasionally, we get customary marriage estates and polygamous estates, but not often enough. And then you do wonder, where are these things going? Are these things being attended to? So, but I suspect that it's very, very prevalent. We also sometimes encounter people that are married in customary law, but they're also married in terms of civil law, which is also a tricky one. How one deals with that. But yeah, unfortunately, I don't know myself. You'd probably have to, and the thing is, of course, customary marriages, if they don't have to be registered with Home Affairs, even Home Affairs wouldn't know. They wouldn't have the statistics. They would only be able to tell us how many people are married according to civil law, probably, because I don't think many people actually go as far as registering their customary marriage with the department, which is, unfortunate. And I see that was pushed, that obligation to register them was pushed out again to 2024. I don't know why they do that, whether it's a lack of capacity, because I would have thought just a campaign throughout the country by Home Affairs to get all these things registered would have been a good idea. But maybe there was a reluctance, people are playing it quiet. Maybe some guys want to keep a low profile or don't want their customary marriages registered, So yeah, I wish I could answer that question, but I suspect it's a lot of people. Must be a lot of people.
No, I also agree on that end, which is why I still maintain that is going to be a huge game changer when it actually gets enacted. Now, that's been us with David Thompson. He is a senior legal advisor at Sanlam Trust, giving us a roundup of what's been going on with the Customary Marriages Amendment Bill that seeks to fundamentally change the structure of customary marriages in South Africa, bringing those in line with what's going on with civil unions and also religious marriages. The big one, sort of looking at people that were married under the old, we're gonna call it dispensation, sort of having their marriages and statuses changing overnight. How do you deal with properties? How do you deal with monogamous relationships? How do you deal with polygamous relationships? Community of property, out of community of property, and one of the big ones is David just highlighting the fact that even though this bill has been on its way for many years, there hasn't really been that much action, from people on the ground, just looking to either, make sure their own situations are correct, which is why I'm saying when it does come into effect and it's now here and it's a reality that it's going to be something that's going to be a big game changer. So that's been it from us, David. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, Diwa, thanks very much to you and to Paige. Thank you.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
To say that this was a fascinating discussion would not do justice because, it was absolutely, I don't know, interesting, fascinating. It made me curious just to think about the implications of what changes to these customary marriages are because, in essence, right, a marriage of any kind is a business relationship. And a lot of what's going on, you heard David talking about a deceased spouse You know, leaving a spouse who is alive, not being able to claim under their estate, and that is a business matter. And when you think about it from that point of view, right, it has a lot of economic implications just going forward when the act is does come about. And as I said towards the end of the discussion, what David highlights, saying that this change has been on its way for some time now, but few people around the country have really taken action to address what the state of their own marriage is, sort of means that when it does come into effect, we're going to see a lot of implications actually now starting to happen. It might not happen overnight, but the fact that the status of a lot of marriages, sort of changes instantly, is a game changer in a lot of ways. So we wait to see how things are going to develop, how it's going to happen, but also going forward, one of the big ones, at least for me, just looking at the landscape, is what he was talking about, to say that as much as customary marriages, we're talking about, a man who leaves estates for his wife or wives, etc. There are a lot of, women now in professions, business women, etc., that are, who have sizable estates that they've been able to accumulate over their lives. And one then wonders, are we going to start seeing more and more prenuptial agreements, the antenuptial ones that they were talking about, where you sort of try to separate out these assets going forward? We wait to see, but fascinating discussion. So that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. On Twitter, we're #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gabaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.